The Prime Minister is signalling a major shift in how Australia engages with the world in a speech to the Lowy Institute in Sydney last night. Scott Morrison warned against a form of globalism that erodes a country's ability to control its own decision-making.
We should avoid any reflex towards a negative globalism that coercively seeks to impose a mandate from an often ill-defined borderless global community, and worse still, an unaccountable internationalist bureaucracy.
That's Scott Morrison speaking overnight in Sydney. Well, we're going to try and unpack exactly what he said and what he meant with New York Times correspondent Jamie Tarabay and the Lowy Institute's Pacific Islands Program Director, Jonathan Pryke, both present for the Prime Minister's address overnight. Both of you, welcome to breakfast.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Jonathan, can you just explain your interpretation of this idea of negative globalism?
Well, yeah, it's a hard one to unpack. I'm not sure how much it has resonated with the room. But it's clearly a pushback. I mean, he's just come back from the United Nations. I don't think he had a whole lot of fun at the United Nations. He doesn't want Australia to be pulled into this global climate change narrative that he sees being perpetrated by this, you know, faceless global intelligentsia. He is pulling it back. He wants to talk about more about nationalism, about the mandate he's been given by the electorate.
But he was railing also at elitist thought. I mean, he was talking pretty much about a lot of the people in that room, I would have thought.
Well, we had a big spread of people in that room. But for the foreign policy wonks, I mean, yeah, a question that in my mind today is, well, where does the rules-based order end and where does this multilateralism that he talks about begin? You know, there's a lot of overlap here, and I think we need much more clarity about what he means about what is good internationalism, what is good globalism, and what is this bad globalism he was talking about last night.
Jamie Tarabay, what's your interpretation of it?
I mean, I do. There were similarities, obviously. You know, he did skip out on the big climate event in New York, and you know, when pretty much everyone except for Donald Trump was there, and. And I just, you know, I think he did kind of come back a lot to the fact that he had to answer to the Australian people and, you know, really trying to redirect it into a nationalism versus an internationalism.
Does it display a different interpretation or even a lack of understanding of why the international order exists, the reason why we're members of international organisations and multilateral bodies, to say they're actually working against our interest? Isn't the whole point of being in them that you can reaffirm your own sovereignty through those rules and that order?
It's interesting, isn't it? We're seeing a lot of different sort of countries sort of chafe against that at the moment. And, you know, he did actually talk about the fact that, you know, he's going to Fiji again and, you know, the sort of the acrimony during the Pacific Islands Forum and how he said that he kind of sat down with the leaders afterwards and explained just what Australia was doing, as though that kind of direct conversation about, you know, the action that Australia was taking on that level would sort of pass muster versus whatever it had to do to adhere to international sort of rules and demands. I think this is, you know, he's interpreting the rules-based order the way that a lot of other leaders around the world are right now, and I'm not surprised to see that.
But not all. I mean, no. When you say that, who?
Well, I'm looking at Xi Jinping right now. I'm looking at Donald Trump right now. I'm looking at, you know, other populist leaders who sort of take what they like and finesse the others to sort of suit their own nationalist agendas.
Back, and on your question of, you know, talking about these global institutions and the role Australia has to play in them, it was a bit of what Scott Morrison was saying was really in conflict with one another. On the one hand, he was saying that, you know, these institutions do not sit above the ballot box. Mm. That it's all nationalist first and then internationalism. But he wants us to have a greater say in these institutions. He's tasked DFAT to audit every institution we're a member of to make sure that we are saying we have as much say in these organisations as possible. But you can't have it both ways, you know. If, you know, he keeps saying to have a go. If you give a go, you'll get a go. And we got to give a go to these institutions. We actually got to buy into the mandate of these institutions to actually have more of a say.
When you hear him saying that he wants an audit of our membership, does that worry you?
I don't think so. I don't think he's going to, you know, at the end of this review, pull us out of any international organisations. I think, you know, he does support the international order.
But, I mean, our membership of a lot of these organisations is based on our funding of them.
That's right.
So that presumably is what he's talking about in terms of an audit.
Well, that's a really good point, Hamish, and
it was a question, really. I'm trying to understand what he's saying.
I think that's the core of it. You know, when he does sort of lay out that he's going to be doing all these things, what I would love is a little transparency about what that audit will look like and just what the findings would be and on what sort of grounds. You know, I just want to know, what are the standards when you look at an audit? Are you looking at it financially? Are you looking at proportionality and looking at leadership and representation?
But is it also about the rhetoric that emerges from those bodies in relation to Australia's own policies? Because that clearly seems to be
right.
An issue. We spoke to Josh Frydenberg, the Treasurer, this morning. He pointed out that, you know, under John Howard, we were more criticised by the UN Human Rights Council, I think was the reference he was making, over our border policies than countries like Iran, for example. Mm. So clearly this is something that is still upsetting the Australian government.
I think a lot of its frustration is targeted at the United Nations, but that's just one part of the multilateral system and often the least effective part. You know, we have the World Bank, IMF, World Trade Organization, Asian Development Bank, all of these institutions that we're a significant contributor to.
Right.
But in the next few years, there are new funding rounds coming up with all these institutions, and we have a pretty miserly aid program at the moment. And so we are going to have to make some tough choices in the future.
And I think that's really, I think that's also a question of influence, right? I mean, if you want to sort of wield influence over these organizations, then you have to be a greater participant. Otherwise, you are kind of subjected to their rulings. And, you know, so it's kind of, you know, you can't have it both ways.
That's
but
right.
It's going to be, to me, I think the question is, what are the standards you're going to subject in, you know, these audits to? And will you share those findings with us?
In a world of competing global powers, which we clearly are now in, how reliant is a sort of middle power like Australia on the international rules-based system?
I think Australia has to be held up to a higher standard simply because where it lives in that international world order. I think that when Australia is made demands of in terms of climate and goals and things like that, that's within reason. And actually to have Scott Morrison say repeatedly over the last, you know, few days and weeks that, you know, China should, you know, the whole business of changing from developing to developed is, you know, it's okay when you are a developed nation, there are expectations of you. If you are focusing on the Pacific as a region that you want to have strengthened ties with, then there's an expectation of you. So where you sit in the world order, I think, is as much as, you know, it may be a middle power when it comes to certain things, but when it comes to regional aspects, I think that Australia more than like holds its own and has to be representative of that.
I want to read a little of what Greg Sheridan is writing this morning on the front page of the Oz in his analysis of that speech. He says, it would be absurd to equate Morrison with US President Donald Trump, but these ideas have some resonance with Trump's recent speech to the UN and with the proud but moderate nationalism that Boris Johnson is championing in Britain. Reading the speech, it's very hard not to see echoes of Steve Bannon. What is the difference between the Steve Bannon orthodoxy and what Scott Morrison is now asserting in this foreign policy speech, Jonathan?
Well, I'd say there's a lot more actually of John Howard and the traditional liberal values in the speech than there is of Trump. There is certainly a sprinkling of the Trump doctrine in here because, you know, he's seen how well it plays in the US and it's playing well for him, I think, here as well for parts of the Australian population. But I don't think it goes so far as Bannon, but Scott Morrison definitely, he's pragmatic, he's a realist, he's about rolling his sleeves up, he wants to just get results, get stuff done. It's about our national interests first, and our national interests can contribute to the global interest.
Yeah,
but it's that way around, not the other, not global interests first, national interests.
Yeah, and I think he's also been around much longer than the Bannons of the world, right? I mean, before any of this, he was immigration minister, he was sort of at the forefront of what Australian government policy would look like and what Australia's sort of texture would look like. And so, yeah, I feel like his focus, and he sort of said this repeatedly last night as well, is that it's really more about being accountable to the people who put him in power than anyone else.
I'm talking to Jamie Tarabe from the New York Times and Jonathan Pryke from the Lowy Institute. Both were listening to Scott Morrison's speech last night. He also pressed again this argument that China should no longer be classified as a developing nation. Let's have a listen.
The world's largest goods exporter since 2009 and the world's largest trading nation since 2013. It's the world's largest manufacturer. It's the world's largest banking sector. It's the world's second largest stock market and the world's third largest bond market. Not bad for a developing country.
possibly reasonable points, but the Prime Minister actually sounded quite exasperated in making that argument. Does tone matter when it comes to dealing with China?
Well, certainly, but I think that the whole speech had quite a bit of tone in it. You know,
what was the tone?
The tone, well, you know, I think we were talking, we were reflecting on it after the speech, and we said it was kind of like he was being a bit of a preacher, but with a gruff preacher. Maybe he's gotten up on the wrong side of the bed. I don't know, but there was a lot of emotion in the speech, and yeah, I think on China, well, you know, China, I think, does have a point. They have a huge stock of poverty still in their country, hundreds of millions still below the poverty line. Their GDP per capita is only around $10,000. That's very low and could qualify them for middle-income status. But then, I mean, all of the points Scott Morrison listed, and it's also a sharp juxtaposition of the 70th anniversary parade that they've just had in Tiananmen Square, where they've, you know, rolled ICBM nuclear missiles through in front of a waving, cheering audience. You know, I think there's a lot of resonance to what Scott Morrison's saying, that, you know, China is behaving, while they may still have developing characteristics, they are behaving like a developed nation, like a superpower, and they need to accept that that comes with responsibility.
I mean, it's interesting to me that one of the things that he said, and there was a clear contrast between the way he framed the American relationship and the Chinese relationship. America is this long-standing ally with deep, deep ties, and China is a strategic partner. And then he also said, you know, we don't have to choose. But I'm always struck by the idea that there's even a choice at this point. You know, and I don't think it's even realistic. I think, you know, there have to be relationships with both, and those need to be clearly defined. And it's interesting to see this growing trend, I guess, you know, sort of hardening towards China over the years, and sort of becoming a bit more demanding of what it should be able to do, and Australia's position against China as well, which I'm fascinated to sort of watch this evolution, just even over the last 12 to 24 months, and sort of watch the way that, you know, the coalition government's been behaving towards China as well.
I think the narrative, they're slowly trying to build up this understanding in the Australian population that the honeymoon on China is over. You know, we had the economic Asia, now we have the security Asia.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to have to deal with this new complex normal, and it's going to be messy.
Yeah, and having those military parades on the same day as, you know, Hong Kong protests, and watching, you know, live rounds, and you know, that's still an unresolved situation. Really, really sort of, you know, emphasises that.
As you said, I think that, Jonathan, there was a broad cross-section of people in the room last night. What was the reaction? What were the conversations about afterwards?
The conversations from my table was we were talking a lot about how it does resonate back to these liberal values of the Howard era. There was less people talking about the Trump in it than I would have thought. But I think, you know, we've unpacked what we've seen in the press today, but it's going to take a little bit longer to hear what everyone was talking about.
But I mean, I think of previous lectures, I went to see Frank Lowy deliver the lecture. I mean, it could not be more different. I mean, he was projecting exactly that sort of globalist agenda of pro-migration, pro-humanitarianism. I mean, it's a very different trajectory this year.
Well, I mean, Scott Morris, the Prime Minister, didn't touch on immigration at all. I mean, Frank, in his introduction, did remark on how important migration was again. I think that's an issue he's, of course, passionate about, and rightly so. So, you know, I don't think it was in sharp juxtaposition to last year, but the tone was certainly different. I mean, Frank was talking all about what makes Australia great, and the Prime Minister was talking about what is Australia's role in the world.
Yeah.
We appreciate you both coming in. Jamie Tarabay from the New York Times and Jonathan Pryke from the Lowy Institute. Thank you.
Thank you.